This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource of pilots and aircraft owners.
Hello, everyone. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting for AvWeb and Aviation Consumer. We've been seeing a lot of news coverage on alternative fuels for aviation, especially hydrotreated renewable jet fuels, which are made from plant biomass. For some perspective on this, we're speaking today with John Hoffmeister, who is former president of Shell Oil, and who believes for the short term, alternatives in biofuels aren't going to meet the rising need for liquid fuels. Let's start, John, with the big picture here. You think we're going to be seeing $5 autogas sometime next year, and that's going to mean probably $7 avgas. What are the factors pushing prices in that direction, and more important, what can we do about it?
If we look at crude oil demand today, it's basically back to where it was at the last price spike period in 2007-2008. Domestic demand is up. Asian demand is way up. While we were in recession, the Chinese consumers were buying more than 30 million cars powered by gasoline and diesel. So global demand for crude oil is going to exceed the 85 million barrels a day that we're capable of producing. And the real question in terms of how high will the price go is how much will the demand exceed the supply? We don't actually know that yet. But I'm suggesting that if the U.S. stays on its current course, we will be requiring more imports, not less, which will help to push the price higher. And the reason we would need more imports, not less, is the current agenda of the White House is to restrict drilling in the most prolific basin the U.S. has, which is the Gulf of Mexico. So we could actually see U.S. production decline because of the U.S. administration's position on deep water drilling, and that would impact consumer prices. How high will it go is anybody's guess, of course, as always, but I'm projecting, based on my experience, that we could well see $5 gasoline in either across the country or in parts of the country towards the end of 2012.
Is that about $120 on the barrel or more?
I'd see it as more than that. I'd see it getting close back up to around $150 a barrel.
Suppose that the policy on offshore drilling were reversed now. Can the oil companies bring that production online fast enough to make a difference?
Well, what I'm advocating the government do is really enable offshore production, enable more U.S. production. I'm calling for a goal of 10 million barrels U.S. production a day instead of seven. And if we did that over time, we would see incremental improvement, but it wouldn't be overnight. So to your question, 2 to 3 years, we might begin to see some incremental increase over the 7 million barrels a day, but it would really be 5 to 7 years before we'd see material movement towards the 10 million barrels a day.
Okay, so let's segue with that discussion right into the talk about alternative fuels. We've been seeing a lot of this in aviation. Aviation on the jet side is really driving some of this development, particularly the military, the Navy and the Air Force would like to be using 50% alternative biomass-derived fuels really by the end of the decade. What's your view on how realistic that is? What has to happen to make that a reality? Can it be a reality?
I can understand the military's desire to invest in alternative sources because national security is their job. And the idea of being reliant on foreign imports to fuel the world's largest military force is seriously questionable. And they don't see the U.S. producing more crude oil, which is why they're investing so much in alternative fuels. Frankly, the only reason it can be done or could be done is unlimited taxpayer subsidy. And so the military has never really worried about the commercial terms of what it is that they need for national security. Only Congress can really be the gate on whether they do or don't invest the kind of money that would deliver material amounts of biofuel. I frankly think that under the deficit conditions that we face today, and particularly if American consumers protest over the high and increasing price of crude oil, we will actually perhaps see more domestic production of crude oil. Were that to occur, I could see the military actually scaling back on its efforts on alternative fuels. If we don't produce more domestic crude, I think the military will continue its program. But keep in mind, just satisfying the military comes nowhere close to satisfying commercial markets at the same time.
Are there any spin-off advantages for the military research for the commercial markets? For example, if they actually are able to achieve the high levels of production that they need, does that bode well for the commercial side?
Well, I think it would, simply because scalability, and depending upon who it is that the military is working with, for example, if they're working with some major companies that have the potential, the financial capital to expand, what is learned in the military market could well be of benefit to the commercial markets over time. I think we've seen that across a wide range of technologies where aerospace or military actually can produce lots of different technologies and material amounts of product for other commercial markets. So the same principle could apply here.
From the oil company point of view, how high is confidence in the alternatives? From what I've read of your book and things you've written and said, it's really a long-term proposition for the oil companies.
I think if you're looking at the future from an oil company perspective, you're primarily going to be looking at crude oil and natural gas. We're about as far out as the human mind can imagine. There are alternative technologies at the fringes that you would consider. And so what you see today is most of the majors are experimenting with a range of feedstock possibilities from different types of biomass, whether that's municipal waste biomass or whether it is green crops or corn or algae. So there are various and sundry types of crops that are being looked at, you know, from sugar beets to sweet to corn to you know, any range of grasses that are being considered, sorghum, switchgrass, et cetera. And I think what they are willing to do is spend a certain amount of money to test the concepts, test the ideas. But at this point, the two biggest projects that we've seen to date is BP's $500 million investment in advanced cellulosic ethanol through several universities, and Exxon's $300 million investment in algae. There's Shell's $7 billion investment in sugarcane ethanol in Brazil. That's a big strategic move for that company. But those are kind of the big plays that we've seen thus far in the majors. I think Conoco has a large agreement with Iowa State University, but it's in the tens of millions, not hundreds of millions of dollars.
And what do you figure is the government role in all of this? Obviously, the government has subsidized ethanol with both early on direct grants and now tax subsidies and actual mandates. Do you think that's necessary for the development of advanced biofuels as well?
I think there's two roles the government plays. One is purely political. And for political purposes, the nation has a corn ethanol program. Through taxpayer subsidies, we're putting, you know, in many parts of the country, 10% of the gasoline actually is ethanol from corn. And the corn lobby is trying to push that to 15%, at least in newer model cars. So there's a political program that's out there trying to satisfy certain constituent groups, in this case, corn farmers in agricultural states. Then there's a governmental role in terms of research and development. And research, I should also say, on the political role, you see a lot of solar and a lot of wind investment at the same time, which is on again, off again, politics of the day. And we'll see what happens in the 112th Congress with the wind and solar subsidies that have been a part of the last 3 or 4 years. Then there's the R&D role. And I think the Department of Energy was set up for R&D purposes to keep the United States at the forefront of evolving technologies. And I think that is really an important and proper role for taxpayer funding to maintain the forward-looking nature of the U.S. Through a government resource, through its renewable energy laboratories, through university funding and so forth, which really does push the frontiers of knowledge, which only the government can afford through taxpayer payments. Private companies would not necessarily commit themselves to pure R&D the way a government agency could.
All right, John, thanks very much for speaking with us. Before we end here, we should put in a plug for your book, which is Why We Hate the Oil Companies, which is basically a good political and technical analysis of lack of energy policy in the United States, and makes for a good read. I've actually started it on my Kindle.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
We've been speaking with John Hoffmeister, who's former president of Shell Oil Company. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting for AvWeb and Aviation Consumer. Thanks for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine. For more information on Aviation Consumer, log on to www.aviationconsumer.com.